Welcome to this half-hour broadcast of AARP the Magazine, an AARP Bulletin. This is Carrie Minarchik, and today we're going to finish reading from the August-September issue of AARP the Magazine, featuring Carlos Santana on the cover in the summer music issue. We're going to move to Your Money issue, part of the issue, with a scam alert. It's by Frank Abagnale. Scam me if you can. In his 40 years of fighting ripoffs, this celebrated fraud expert has seen it all. Here he details three recent scams and what you should do to avoid them. Case 1. Imposter fraud. Fake IRS agents, very real pain. When Megan Muirfield, then 40, answered a phone call in early 2018, two people were on the line, a woman and a man, both claiming to the work for the Internal Revenue Service. They said I owed $2,085 in back taxes, and that if I didn't put 50% down, I was going to go to jail, Megan says. The woman told her, "We have never gotten a response from you, so it has been considered an intentional fraud, and a lawsuit has been filed under your name by the United States government." The man said, "The arrest warrant is released on your name." "I was scared," Megan recalls. She walked to a nearby Walgreens and did as the IRS agents, in quotes, instructed. She bought a gift card. She then scratched off the strip to reveal the numbers on the back and read them to the scammers over the phone. "The man told me I had to go back into the store and buy more cards," she says, her emotions still raw almost a year later. "I kept telling him how cold it was outside, and he'd just say, 'That's okay, ma'am. Just keep scratching off and reading the numbers to me.'" The man kept her on the phone the whole time, warning her not to tell anyone why she was buying so many cards with cash. In all, she bought $650 worth of gift cards, not the amount originally demanded, but enough to appease the crooks. Megan was so frightened that she called one of her co-workers to tell her she might not make it to work the following Friday because she was going to be arrested for tax evasion. After hearing the story, the co-worker said she was worried her friend was being scammed. Megan then realized what had happened to her. The scammers had gotten her under the ether, as the condition is known among con artists, that heightened emotional state where you're unable to think clearly or make rational decisions. But it was too late. Her money was gone for good. The lessons? This is a classic imposter fraud. It's rampant in America right now, and older Americans are often targeted because they are more likely to answer the phone and be trusting of the authority on the other end. But foiling these phone frauds is relatively easy, as long as you know how the federal government and most scammers operate. First, the IRS doesn't notify people of tax issues by phone unless it has sent written communications, usually multiple times. So just hang up if you receive an unexpected call from someone claiming to be an IRS agent or representative. 2. The IRS and its collection agencies don't accept payments via gift cards, period. If anyone claims to be from a government agency and asks for a payment using a gift card, this is without a doubt fraudulent. 3. Government agencies don't make idle threats, such as saying they'll freeze your assets, revoke your driver's license, or change your immigration status. If you have legitimately broken tax law, the government will follow due process, meaning there will be letters and in-person hearings. And finally, 4, the IRS doesn't send out unsolicited emails or ask for detailed personal and financial information via email. Delete emails purporting to be from the IRS and don't click on links. Case number 2, dating danger. Too good to be true? In a word, yes. Melissa Trent's heart jumped when she saw a new message from a user called Love to Hike 1972 on her account with dating website Plenty of Fish that Thursday in April 2017. A 40-something single mom, Melissa had experienced bad luck finding anyone nice who shared her love of the outdoors, so she was eager to check this person out. She was not disappointed. His account featured photos showing a handsome, fit, smiling guy in hiking clothes, engaged in outdoor activities. His interests included hiking, biking, skiing, and craft beer, all the things that Melissa liked. After exchanging a few messages, she gave the man her cell number. He reached out that evening. His name was Jeff Cantwell. New in town, he had just relocated to Colorado Springs from Alaska. A few days later, Melissa agreed to meet Jeff. He looked just like his photographs. That gave her a feeling of security. He regaled her with stories about his adventures. There was no argument over the bill. Jeff paid. A few days later, he asked what her two daughters liked to eat and then came over to make spaghetti and meatballs. The two were soon in constant contact. Jeff told Melissa he'd lost his parents in a car accident that had also claimed the life of his fiancée and their baby. He said he'd been in Afghanistan, where he was injured. "We really liked each other," she says, or so it seemed. But soon Jeff's behavior started to raise red flags. Jeff asked to borrow a little cash. He was having issues with his Veterans Affairs benefits. Whenever a check was deposited, his account froze until the check cleared. It seemed plausible to Melissa, and Jeff said he needed only $100 to see him through the weekend, and he would pay it back promptly on Monday. Then they decided to go to a casino, and Jeff asked if she could instead withdraw $200 from her account, $100 to get him through the weekend, and $100 more for them to gamble with. She consented, and they stretched the gambling money for 10 hours of fun before it was gone. During their time at the casino, she overheard Jeff talking to another customer about living in Alaska and heard him say, "My mom is Inuit," in the present tense. But he told Melissa that his parents were deceased. The following Monday, Jeff said he was still having trouble with his account and needed to drive to a branch of his bank an hour away. Despite misgivings, she agreed to let him take her new Audi, and she reluctantly let him borrow a credit card for gas. When hours passed without word from Jeff, Melissa texted him. He said that by the time he'd gotten to the bank, it was closed. He'd stay overnight, sleeping in her car in the bank parking lot. "Chill out," he texted. He'd never spoken to her like that. Melissa was finally forced to face the likelihood that something was very wrong in her new relationship. When Jeff refused to prove he was really at the bank, she decided to call the county sheriff's office. Police soon informed Melissa that Jeff Cantwell was actually Jeffrey Dean Caldwell, a 44-year-old criminal who'd been incarcerated in several states for felonies ranging from burglary to writing bad checks. Caldwell often trolled internet dating sites and trailheads looking for targets. He'd been paroled in September 2016 after serving time for identity theft in Colorado. But after he connected with Melissa, he'd stopped checking in with his parole officer. Eventually, Caldwell was arrested in South Dakota. By then, he'd maxed out Melissa's credit card and cleaned out her bank account. Melissa got her Audi back, but it was a mess. Caldwell had gone on a craft beer tour and decorated the car's exterior with stickers from the breweries he had visited. The lessons. Since the first internet dating sites appeared in 1993, online dating has soared, and so have romance scams. In Melissa's case, the two people actually met. More commonly, the fraud is done entirely online by an imposter, often working several romance scams at once, often from a foreign country. Many of these scams come out of Africa. These swindles often target older Americans who might have more financial resources and a greater chance of being alone. To avoid being the victim of a romance scam, first, go outside the dating site to research the person. For example, use the website TinEye or Google Images to search by image and see if that person's photo shows up in other places under a different name. Next, be skeptical of stories designed to elicit sympathy, like Jeff's account of his family being killed in a car crash and his claim that he'd been injured in Afghanistan. Third, beware of requests for money, the biggest red flag. If that happens, say no and go on full alert. Never provide your last name, phone number, address, or place of work until you've gotten to know someone well enough to trust him or her. And finally, turn off location settings if you use a mobile app for dating, so cons can't figure out where you live or visit. And case 3, identity theft, a crime for his lifetime. The mail pile was predictably large when the Karpinski family returned home from vacation in July 2018. But what wasn't normal was the amount of grown-up mail addressed to little Gavin Karpinski, who was just 5 years old. I wondered why there were so many advertisements addressed to him, but I ripped them up and tossed them and didn't think much about it, recalls Heather, Gavin's mother. The next day, Gavin received two more envelopes in the mail, and she did the same thing. Then the bombshell. The following day's deliveries included a collection notice addressed to Gavin, seeking payment for $200 in health and nutrition products ordered through a television infomercial. Heather called the company, and a representative said they'd spoken with Gavin. He was a regular customer. I told the representative that Gavin was only 5 years old and could not even dial a phone, she says. Shocked and frightened, she contacted the police. 4 days after she received that notice, the ugly truth came out. In May, Gavin's doctor's computer had been hacked, compromising the names, dates of birth, social security numbers, and insurance information of 14 underage patients, including Gavin. Crooks had already used his information to open credit cards in his name and to make purchases. The police told Heather that the doctor's office was not liable. It had paid for a security system to handle its data, and that was where the breakdown had occurred. The only way for Heather to protect Gavin was to obtain fraud protection through a credit monitoring service. He'll need it for the rest of his life. I was told his information will continue to be sold on the black market, and his medical identity can continue to be used, Heather notes. He's 5. he really shouldn't have a credit report or a credit rating. But since he does, he also has credit monitoring. Heather will have to watch Gavin's credit until he's an adult. Then he'll take over. Protecting your medical identity is a burden that falls on the victim, Heather adds. She wonders how hard it will be for her son when he grows up and wants to use a credit card or needs to prove his medical identity to new doctors. For now, his credit is frozen, but his personal information and medical records are out there forever. The lessons. Everything a crook needs to commit financial identity theft, personal data such as your SSN and bank account numbers, sells for about $25 on the black market. But stolen health insurance and medical records can fetch about $1,000 per person. The greater potential yield of medical identity theft justifies the higher price. Older Americans are particularly vulnerable. Medicare billing scams cost taxpayers over $60 billion a year. Here's how to protect medical data. Monitor bank and credit card accounts and insurance benefit statements for costs you didn't incur. Act promptly to correct records. Treat your insurance numbers as if they're sacred, private, and valuable as your Social Security number. Shred any medical paperwork you don't need to retain. That includes prescription drug labels. Avoid revealing on social media any surgery, medical procedure, or visit to a specialist. And this article was adapted from Scam Me If You Can by Frank Abagnale, AARP's Fraud Watch Network Ambassador. Next, Doug Shadell, Out-Tech the Scammers. Thieves are expert at using technology to steal from us. I say, fight fire with fire. These four options provide strong protection against fraud. Sign up if you haven't already. 1. Informed delivery. It's free. The U.S. Postal Service is now offering a terrific service. Each delivery day, it will send an email to you containing the digital scans of the letter-sized mail that will soon arrive at your box or door. The email also details packages that will arrive that day or soon. Now you can cross-check for mail theft or ask someone to pick up a package if you're away. Sign up at informeddelivery.usps.com. 2. Robocall blocking. Cost free to $5 a month. There are three ways to block robocalls. The first is to sign up for the federal Do Not Call registry, which will limit the number of legal sales pitches you get. The second, check with your phone service provider to see what it offers. Providers are under pressure to step up protections against robocalls. The third is to sign up for a third-party robocall blocker. This software blocks most robocalls to your mobile phone. Some can cover your home phone, too. Among the respected services are NomoRobo, Umail, Truecaller, and RoboKiller. How to start. Get on the Do Not Call registry by phoning 888-382-1222 from the number you wish to protect, or sign up online at donotcall.gov. For third-party services, go to their websites, review the choices, and follow the sign-up instructions. Number 3, Password Manager. The cost is free to $120 a year. I've probably exceeded 50 active passwords, what with all the retailers, services, and social media accounts I use. Yet all my passwords are different. Keeping track is easy if you use a password manager. Software that creates unique, complex passwords for you and then stores them in a highly secure digital vault. Now you just need to remember one robust password to access all the rest. Plus, these services provide fraud alerts, secure autofill functions, and more. How to start? Popular password managers include Dashlane, LastPass, and 1Password. Typically, you pay only if you want a more advanced service that covers several devices. You'll sign up online or via an app. Be ready to enter all your accounts. And finally, bank or credit alerts. The cost is free. Many banks offer a service in which they will email, text, or call whenever your debit or credit card has been used, even if it's for legitimate charges. The goal? You know immediately if someone who shouldn't be tapping your account is doing so. You can set up the alerts for any amount. For credit cards I rarely use, I've set alerts to zero. That way I'm notified about any activity. I put higher dollar amounts on my high use accounts so I don't get bombarded. How to start? Simply go to your bank's website or visit a branch to get set up. Next, we're going to go to the personal best section with a My Memory Challenge. Novelist Catherine Hiller strengthened her brain by believing she could in an article called World Without End. Like many of my peers, I never learned to locate the countries of the world, and I've always felt disadvantaged when I read about nations I can't place. So last year, I decided to memorize the locations of all 195 countries. The difficulty of the task was part of its appeal. The aging mind needs challenges, and I knew that this exercise would test my memory and hopefully strengthen it. My spatial ability is poor, but psychologist Carol Dweck has shown that mental abilities are not fixed. We can improve them if we believe we can. Dweck calls this attitude a growth mindset. Armed with my own growth mindset, I started with the Middle East. It's always in the news, so at least the names were familiar, but I had a hard time anchoring down their places. What I'd learned on Monday, I forgot by Wednesday, so every day I had to go over it all. For 10 minutes each weekday, I stared at maps. Finally, I mastered the region's 17 countries. On to Africa. It has 54 countries, most of which rarely appear in the news. Here, I used mnemonic devices. In Southeast Africa, for example, I seized on the 4 Z's, Tanzania, Mozambique, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Then my first grandchild was born, and I had a new Z to think about, Zadie. For days, I stopped memorizing countries and instead gazed at photos of the baby. When I got back to my Africa map, I'd forgotten Gabon, as well as the Republic of Congo, even though it's right next door to the Democratic Republic of Congo. Clearly, I would backslide if I didn't rigorously cleave to my practice. Europe was next. Only after many days staring at Hungary and Austria did I recall that at age 10, I failed my interview for the TV program Quiz Kids by being unable to name more than 2 landlocked European countries. Could this failure be the deep reason for my current obsession? North America, with its 3 familiar nations, was a gift. And South America was also familiar, except for Guyana, Suriname, and French Guiana. But 7 countries are squeezed into Central America, and then there are all the Caribbean island nations. The new world, I knew, would take a while longer. And on that thought, I took a 10-day holiday from MAPS and traveled cross-country to meet Zadie. Being with my grandbaby was bliss. Once home, however, it took many days of study to get back to where I'd left off. Perhaps this task will last forever, I thought. Perhaps for every country I learn, I'll forget another. And probably my mind would get less retentive with the years, until I might not even know the names of the continents, nor indeed the name of my own village. On this somber note, I contemplated Asia. Meanwhile, parts of Europe were fading fast. Serbia, where are you? Slovenia? Slovakia? I worried I'd fail my final test. Then I reminded myself that the process was the point. Memorizing maps was my brain game. My friend Jane was taking drum lessons and going to physics meetups to maintain her brain. Surely I could tackle Barbados, Dominica, and Grenada, and the 13 island nations off the east coast of Australia. Sadly, soon there will be only 11, as Tuvalu and Vanuatu are being flooded by rising seas. A few months had passed since I'd started my task, and I was finally ready to test myself. I filled in a series of blank outline maps I downloaded from the internet, hesitating here and there. It took almost half an hour. Then I checked my work. To my chagrin, I saw I had 9 countries wrong. This was disappointing, until I realized I'd also gotten 95% of the countries right. 95% would have to do. I was, for the moment, elated. And my children were impressed. Old dog, new trick. And now I'm ready to visit Zadie again. And I wonder what present to bring. Then I know. I can arrive with a globe, so I can give her the world. Catherine Hiller, age 72, is the author of 1 memoir and 6 novels, the latest of which is titled The Feud. And for our final article, it's from Catherine Alicia George, the National Volunteer President, who says, don't waste your cash on brain supplements. Keeping our brains healthy tops the list of concerns as we age, and it is tempting to think there is a magic potion to achieve that goal. Tempting, but no such potion exists. The latest report from the Global Council on Brain Health, created by AARP, finds that there is no convincing evidence to recommend daily dietary supplements for brain health in healthy older adults, and that the supplements are likely a waste of your money. This is no small matter. Memory supplement sales reached $643 million in 2015, nearly doubling in value in a decade, according to the U.S. Government Accountability Office. Our research shows that about half of older adults incorrectly believe that the Food and Drug Administration allows on the market only dietary supplements that have been determined to be safe and effective. Sadly, that is not true. The council suggests that instead of turning to supplements, we should choose foods shown to support a healthy brain. Other council research reports that a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, especially green leafy vegetables and berries, is associated with better brain health. There is no magic potion, but there are many paths to maintaining brain health. Being social, staying active, getting enough sleep, and being stimulated by activities. For practical tips on what to do for your brain, go to globalcouncilonbrainhealth.org, and you will find evidence-based articles, brain-healthy recipes, and more at stayingsharp.aarp.org. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to this half-hour segment of AARP the Magazine and AARP Bulletin. This is Carrie Minarchek. Have a great week.